right. Well, I am Ann Eller, and it is my utmost pleasure to be out here at the Greenwood Genetics Center. We have broken into one of the labs here today. Not exactly. We're visiting. We've been invited to tour the labs here, and I'm here with Lucas. How do you say that last name, Lucas?
Bronicky.
Bronicky. Okay. And where are you from originally?
Ottawa, Canada.
And how'd you end up down here at the Genetics Center?
Well, it was a long process, but this is a unique center, one of a kind in the world, and I found it online, basically, and once I became interested in the field, I found this place, and I applied, and that's how I got here, yeah.
Well, that's how you got here. Now, what is your specialty?
My specialty, I'm in molecular lab, so we do molecular testing, and I'm a fellow in the molecular lab, yeah.
Wow, okay. So what are we going to be seeing, and what are we going to be talking about here today?
So we're going to be talking about the type of testing that we do in the molecular lab. We're going to take you through everything from start to end, so how we isolate the DNA, and then the type of tests that we do, and then I guess we'll finish off with some of the newer stuff, some of the next generation sequencing that we do.
So can you tell us what type of things you do here before we actually get on the tour, so you can give us kind of a preview of what we're going to be talking about?
Sure. So we look at the DNA level. We look for what we call mutations, so changes in the DNA sequence, or deletion, so missing pieces in the DNA, and these are all mutations associated with different genetic conditions. I guess that's a very vague and general description of what we do.
Okay, for the layman out there that's hearing this, you know, the Genetic Center is such a resource here in Greenwood. I think sometimes the people of Greenwood don't realize how great a resource we have. So what exactly do people come here for?
So people come here for testing their DNA for different conditions, heritable conditions, something that may be running through their family history. They also come here for what we call de novo or spontaneous conditions.
All right, so we're talking about what we do in this lab here, and this is the molecular lab. Now, what makes this lab different from the other labs that you have here?
So this lab, we look at the DNA sequence, whereas other labs, they might look at enzyme function or lack of function, or they might look at chromosomes, so whole larger fragments of DNA, whereas here we look at single genes, changes within single genes.
Now, are there very specific things that you actually look for here in the molecule, or are you just identifying that, oh, there's something wrong here?
So we started off, most of our testing we do, we look at particular genes that we're interested in. We have certain tests that we do here. But now that we're hoping to jump more into a broader type of testing where you can look for changes within the whole exome or all the...
It's kind of hard to talk about this, isn't it, when you're not up to speed on this. But, you know, I think that's what, as far as being fascinating, it's fascinating for those of us that don't know a lot of what goes on. But the very fact that this lab is a totally separate, it's a separate lab from other things that you do here. Do people actually come here for testing?
Yes, we have a clinic downstairs, and people come to see the physicians, the clinical geneticists, as we call them, and sometimes we get a sample from the patient, typically a blood sample, and we conduct the test here. And we also get samples sent in from all over South Carolina and all over the world, actually.
You know, that is fascinating. As far as how long have you worked here?
Just over a year.
Just over a year.
Yeah.
Does it amaze you the things that you're able to do here? Or is it you've just gotten used to it and it's like, oh, well, yes, it's another day at the office?
It definitely does amaze me. The way the technology is progressing so quickly, I think it's quite phenomenal where we are today, and the future looks even brighter.
You know, that is tremendous. I read that. I don't know whether will you have anything to do with the ability to test with that new test that y'all are going to be able to do? No, that's not what you do. Okay, different lab. Okay, well, listen, how many people actually work in the lab here?
In the lab, that's a good question. I think we have just over 20.
Just around 20.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So would you like to show us the lab and show us some of the things that you do here?
Yes, that's what I prepare for the most.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go look at what we got to look at here. All right. So what are we looking at here?
You've got a computer room where we can look at the different sequences, the DNA sequence, using different software. So here are our technicians. You can see they're analyzing different genes and sequences within genes. And this is where that all happens.
Now, I see a screensaver there that says Clemson University. Is that some collaboration?
That's right. We are having a collaboration with Clemson University, and they're building a building on site on our Greenwood site. Yeah.
Exactly. I'm very familiar with that. That's why I saw that. So go ahead. We got this big lab here. My goodness, you've got sinks and all this equipment to work on stuff and people with all this paper. Yes, lots of good stuff. So what else we got here?
So this is where the samples arrive. As I mentioned previously, most of our samples are blood, around 95%. But we also receive saliva, tissue, and as well as cell culture samples. And this is in this room where we extract the DNA from these samples. So we use three different methods. One of them is a more manual, more hands-on method, and two of them are more automated, as you can see the big machines here, where they can extract the DNA for us.
I guess this is probably really expensive equipment, too.
Yes, definitely.
That's right. So do you do more than one sample at a time?
Yeah. These machines can handle 16 samples at a time. We have a smaller machine that can handle up to 6, and then manually we can do up to 16 as well around at a time. Yeah.
Now that's a great question. How many samples come through? I mean, like either on a day or a week, or how many come through?
On a day, we can do anywhere from a dozen to 40 samples, and I believe last year we analyzed around 8,000 in this lab.
8,000 just in this lab.
Yeah, that's a number I heard.
Wow.
Don't quote me on that.
But that's a lot of samples and a lot of things coming through.
Definitely, yes. Pretty Absolutely. High throughput, yes.
All right, so what else have you got to show me here in the lab?
Okay, so here you can see all of the technicians have their own personal bench space where they can do their own testing. And that each technician is assigned a certain amount of tests mm-hmm. that they're responsible for. And a lot of our testing requires PCR, which is polymerase chain reaction, mm-hmm. which is basically just taking a fragment of DNA and making more copies of it. And because of this, this process is inherent to contamination. So we have a room here where we have hoods, specially designed hoods, where we can set up our tests in the hood to prevent.
In the hood?
Yeah, in the hood, that's right, to prevent contamination.
Sure. Well, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And people are working in here right now.
Yep. People are working right now, doing their own tests that they're responsible for.
Now, is a person, is a technician, they are responsible for doing it all the way through, or does each person do a part?
They are responsible for doing it all the way through. So they get assigned a certain amount of testing or a certain amount of tests, and they're responsible from A to Z.
Wow. Now, what are the checks in this system?
Checks?
I mean, you know, if I'm a technician and I do the job, mm-hmm. Are there any checks to make sure that I did it correctly?
Yes, yeah. So that's where the directors come in. They check the paperwork and they make sure everything was done properly. There's no contamination, that the right patient was run, and that the results, and they look at the results, and then they can decide whether the patient is affected or not affected based on the paperwork.
Okay. All right. And now we've got more here, more equipment.
More equipment. Those machines you see there, those are the PCR machines that I was talking about earlier. More bench space. And here are our sequencers. So these are the machines that read the DNA code or the DNA sequence. These two machines right here.
Okay.
So this is a little older technology now, but it's still very commonly used to this day in human genetics.
Wow. So, and now what are these machines right here?
So these are the PCR machines that I was talking about, so they can make more copies of a fragment of DNA. So these sequencers I should mention, they can read anywhere from 500 to 700 what we call nucleotides of DNA code.
That's pretty small, I guess, huh?
That's pretty small, considering that we each human cell has around 3.2 billion.
Each cell?
Yeah.
3.2 billion?
Yeah.
Have you counted them?
I have, yes.
Okay. Okay. 3.2 billion, and he's counted them, folks. I'm telling you, I am impressed. What else do we have here?
We have a robot here that speeds up some of the sequencing testing that we do. It just makes it more automatic and requires less hands-on time. So basically, we use this for a good chunk of our testing because a lot of our testing is sequencing-based. So
what does a robot actually do?
It can clean the DNA and prepare it for sequencing on those other two machines that I showed you.
Wow.
Before,
okay,
we used to have to do that manually, you know.
Well, so what would be the speed up of the time versus when it had to be done manually versus now that you have the robot?
Well, the whole process manually takes around an hour to an hour and a half, and the robot will do it in around half the time, maybe even a little bit less. And obviously you can do other things in the meantime while you put your samples on the robot.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, very cool. Anything else we got to see here in this one?
And this is our newest pride, I guess. This is our things that we're most proud of. So these are called.
It has a sign that says "Running, do not touch."
Yeah, I know you're tempted right now to touch it, probably. Right?
Exactly. So what does it do?
So these are called next generation sequencers. So like I mentioned before, those two sequencers that are a little bit older technology, they can read around 500 to 700 base pairs, whereas these new machines can read the whole genetic code, so all of your 3.2 billion letters, and they can read it all in parallel.
And now when it reads this, does it find where there's something that's wrong or something isn't way, and it points it out so you don't have to check each one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't point it out. That requires more bioinformatic work after.
Okay.
But so these machines sequence the DNA for us. And then after, we require bioinformatic work where we can compare that sequence to a reference sequence and find if there's any changes.
Wow. So this is really cutting edge stuff, isn't it?
Definitely. Yeah. We were one of the, I think this machine right here that you're looking at, it's called the NextSeq 500, and we purchased the 12th one that was ever made. So.
The 12th one?
Yeah.
Wow. I guess that wasn't cheap then.
No.
How much does equipment cost in this field? Just, I mean, ballpark. I'm not looking for anything exact, but...
Well, it depends. If you're talking about next-generation sequencing technology, the NextSeq 500, I believe that one costs around $500,000 to $600,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
So do you let anybody touch this?
Only people that are trained, well-trained.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, I would think so. Well, this is pretty neat. What else? Is there anything else you want to tell us about here?
Well, that was the apex of the tour, but I can tell you about this room as well.
Radioactive waste.
Radioactive, yeah. So we don't have to actually gown up because nobody's doing any testing in here right now, but technically we are supposed to be gowned up if we go in this room, so we'll just stay on the perimeter. But this is... This is a room where we perform a test called a Southern blot. It's an older test as well. Mm-hmm. And basically we look for diseases such as Fragile X and myotonic dystrophy. And in these diseases, you have a repeat of three nucleotides that occurs. And we basically do this test to determine how big the repeat expansion is in these patients. And usually the bigger the expansion, the more affected these patients are.
Wow. Now, that brings me another question. How about the fact of older testing versus the newer testing? Are the older tests as good as the newer ones?
No, but some of them have not been replaced yet with newer technology. There's several test developments that are occurring, but nothing has replaced Southern blot to get the results that we get with the older technique.
Okay. I just wondered if you actually replace a test or if you still use use an older test. So if you haven't found a newer test, then you have to use the older test.
Yes. If we haven't found something that works as well, then we still use the older test.
Wow.
Because it works that well.
Absolutely. Well, you certainly have a fascinating job here, and we really appreciate you taking the time to show us all this stuff. I don't know what I'm looking at, most of it, but it still is very, very impressive. Lucas, thanks so much for talking to us today.
Thanks, Ann. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Tim Wood, he is the director of the biochemistry lab.
Hi, I'm Ann Eller. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
I am here with Dr. Tim Wood. Now, what exactly do you do out here?
I run the biochemical genetics laboratory at the Greenwood Genetics Center. We measure different analytes in patients' blood to try to figure out whether they have a genetic condition or not.
Now, how long have you been working here?
I've been working here about 14 years. I came over from Alabama, did my training here in actually two specialties, and then took over as the director in, I believe, 2006.
So what do you think about working here? Is it pretty awesome?
It is awesome to work here. The Greenwood Genetics Center fosters a real environment of collegiality. Everyone's opinion is taken, and there's a real mix of trying to bring new ideas as well as the experience from some of the more senior members of the staff.
You know, I think from a senior members, I bet it would be fascinating for them to be, as they look at what's being done today versus what was done years ago, I bet there would be some fascinating conversations about that.
Yeah, the field of genetics is changing every month. Just what we were doing 5 years ago is almost obsolete compared to what we're doing now. And the really important thing is we're trying to help people, and we're helping more and more people. We're developing new therapies, and we're trying to make an impact in people's lives.
You know, I would think that with all the things on being on the precipice of all these changes, that it's years from now, will we need a genetic center, or will it all be figured out?
What I've found is the more we learn about genetic conditions, mm-hmm. the more we find that we need to search, the more investigation we need to do. So just identifying a change in a patient leads to new therapies, and those therapies need novel tests, and we need to understand how one specific test might be related to the physical features that are associated with the condition, but there might be another marker that's associated with the psychological or the mental impairment that someone has. So it gets
really complex. So the more we learn, the less we know, almost, type thing?
Pretty much. Some of the disorders that we've been treating for 20, 30 years, we're still just understanding exactly the best avenues to treat them. And then new drugs come up, new treatment modalities come in, and so those have to all be investigated using the same strategies from the initial therapies.
Interesting. Now, what exactly, we're in a different lab here, what exactly goes on in this lab?
So in this lab, we get typically blood from a patient, and then we'll put the blood in one of our instruments to measure different levels of different chemicals, amino acids, disorders, and how a fat's broken down in your body. We'll measure those analytes and try to determine if they're increased or low.
And how many people work in this lab?
So in this lab,
roughly
we have about 5 to 10 people. We process a little over 12,000 to 14,000 samples a year. We do it.
Wow.
We do it on average. We get by the time, it's about 5 days from when the sample gets here to when it goes out. A lot of our samples deal with sick newborns that are treated at local hospitals, and so those results have to actually go out the same day. And there's a lot of communication with other physicians and getting those stat results to them. But it can make a real difference in a real sick little baby.
Absolutely. So you do blood, you're testing blood, and you're doing, what type of equipment do you use? I see a spectrotonic Genesis 2.
Right.
That looks like an interesting one.
It is an interesting one. Most of the compounds we're looking at, we label them with some sort of fluorescent compound, and then the machine is set up to separate our compound of interest and then detect the fluorescence or whatever signal the molecule of interest is emitting.
Now, just out of curiosity, what do you work with robotics in this one?
You know, not as much as some of the other labs. Our stuff is still pretty hands-on. You can look around you and see there's a lot of people doing a lot of hands-on work, but automation is coming to our lab, and especially, well, let me back up. We deal with newborn screening in South Carolina, so we're one of the follow-up labs, and those processes in newborn screening are becoming more and more automated. So we deal with. You know, 12,000-14,000 samples a year. They deal with 60,000 samples a year. So there's got to be a lot of automation in that.
Absolutely. Well, is there anything else you can tell us about the lab here?
What else can I tell you about the lab? We're really focused on treatment, and we're really interested in taking genetics into believing the disability of different patients they have. And it's something we're real passionate about, something the genetic centers putting a lot of effort into with the Clemson Collaborative and things like that. And in the end, we're all here to try to make somebody's life just a little bit better.
Well, you know, I know because I've read so much and I talked to Dr. Skinner, and he has told me all the wonderful things that are happening. What do you think the collaboration with Clemson is going to do for the Genetic Center?
I think it's going to allow us to go into some different avenues. It's going to broaden our base a little bit. I think it's going to allow us to get into have more people focused on novel strategies and therapeutics. I think Clemson also brings the ability to work more closely with industry, and that's another thing we do. We have almost $1 million in contracts with different industries, drug companies, pharmaceutical industries, and things like that. So I think you'll see the Genetic Center itself moving a little bit more into that avenue.
It's a fascinating time to be on board here, isn't it?
It is a really exciting time to be in the Greenwood Genetic Center, absolutely.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Tim Wood, for talking to us here today. Looks like you got a lot to do here.
We do. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Where are we going now, Lori?
We're going to actually go to another building now.
Okay.
She's supposed to be meeting me in the room.
All right. So, where are we at, and who am I talking to? How do you say your name?
Alka Chaube.
And where are you from, Alka?
Well, I'm originally from India, but I've been at Greenwood for the past 6 years at Greenwood Genetic Center. I feel like I've been here forever.
How did you end up here at the Greenwood Genetic Center?
So I came here to do my clinical cytogenetics fellowship in 2008. And then I stayed here as an assistant director. Then I did my clinical molecular genetics fellowship. And now I'm the director of the cytogenetics lab. And we've done a lot of amazing things here in this microarray lab over here.
I understand this was actually the genetic lab when it first started.
So this was the molecular genetics lab here. And now since we've moved to the new building, this lab used to be in the basement of the research building. So then the lab was able to transition and move over here because now we need the space. We need to be able to do all the different platforms that we run and all the different technologies that we do. So this is good.
You're doing some great new testing that just got approved.
Yes. So this technology is called microarray technology. And what this is essentially looking at is the high-resolution view of the whole genome, looking for deletions or duplications of different chromosomes across the entire genome. So, you know, we already know that there are some micro deletions, which are, you know, regions of your genome that are deleted, or regions of the genome that have an extra copy, which is called a micro duplication. And so
she's way over my head just for the fact. And so if you're listening out there and you don't understand it, neither do I. But go ahead, talk to us.
So our DNA genetic material is packaged in the form of chromosomes.
Correct.
So we all have 46 chromosomes in each of our somatic cells, right? So we have 23 chromosomes, essentially. We have 22 chromosomes and an X and Y chromosome, which are our sex chromosomes. So we have two copies of each chromosome, 1 through 22, which are our autosomes. So if there is an extra copy of, let's say, chromosome 21, that is called trisomy 21, which means there are three copies of chromosome 21, and which is the molecular genetic reason for Down syndrome. This is just an example. But that is the whole chromosome you know, having an extra copy of the whole chromosome.
My brother had Down syndrome.
Well, see, now you can relate to that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, we are looking for regions of the chromosome that could be gained or lost, but are not the entire chromosome. So those are called microdeletions and microduplications. And this is where this technology plays a very important role.
What do you determine out of that?
So we determine the genetic cause for a patient's intellectual disability or any other genetic disorder, you know, their specific clinical phenotype. So all our clinical geneticists at the Greenwood Genetic Center, when they see a patient, they, you know, based on the clinical information, what kind of features do they have, you know, are they intellectually challenged? Do they have some intellectual disability? Do they have some delay in development? So there are a known number of syndromes that are associated with these deletions or duplications or copy losses and copy gains of the genome. And that's what we look at here by this technology.
I think I understand. Can I come to work now?
Yes. Absolutely.
Now this new test that is been approved, mm-hmm. What does all this mean?
So there are, first of all the tests, the whole genome tests that are available out there that all the diagnostic laboratories perform, they're all called LDTs, which means they are a laboratory developed test. So there was no whole genome assay that was approved or cleared by the FDA. So this is the first whole genome scan that the FDA has cleared. And our lab was fortunate that we played a role in their clinical trial. So we were one of their sites for the FDA clinical trial. And the name of the company is Affymetrix. And last week on Friday, we also launched, we became the first lab in the country to be offering that FDA clear test for our patients.
Now, I was talking to Lori, and she said you'd been working with this company for several years. How long a process has this been?
So we've been working with Affymetrix for the past 4 years. The first time, we had their platform for over 6-7 years, but we switched diagnostically in 2010 when we started using their platform because it has a lot of number, it has 2.7 million probes on this small chip which covers the entire genome, and I'll show you an example of that shortly. So we've been working with them very closely for the past 4 years.
Wow. This is exciting, isn't it? What will this mean to the Greenwood Genetic Center?
So this means a number of things to the Greenwood Genetic Center. First of all, as I was explaining to you, that all the other tests, they are lab-developed tests. So mm-hmm. they're not cleared by the FDA. So each lab has to undergo a lot of clinical validation, a lot of samples we have to process through, do a lot of paperwork and validate the assay before we can offer it as a clinical test. In this case, because it is FDA cleared, we only have to verify it, because now the responsibility is on the vendor, in this case Affymetrix, that they give us a product that is already undergone the rigorous clinical trials and the regulatory assurance that has been associated with it. How does this help us? From the lab perspective, it helps us that we have chips and reagents, the quality of the reagents, they're all FDA cleared. So we know that if there is any problem, it's essentially not us, as long as we have the certificate of qualification from them. How it helps our patients and our clinicians is that for the longest time, these kind of technologies, you know, when we have patients and our clinicians order this kind of test, we have a lot of resistance from the payers. So the insurance companies say, well, this is a screening test, or this is investigational. And so, you know, there is not a lot of reimbursement associated with it. So it actually affects the patients that way. Having this kind of clearance means that, first of all, now it is not a screening test. Okay, there is a clear indication, there is a clear intended use. So now, after undergoing all these different clinical trials, there's a lot of quality assurance and a lot of regulatory compliance that is associated with this assay. So it's going to benefit our patients and families tremendously.
So it will be some, it's like any test that you have from a doctor's office or a hospital or whatever. It'll be, should it be needed, it will be approved.
Absolutely.
Well, that is awesome. That is really awesome.
It is.
Now,
it's exciting.
Now, what happens in this lab? What did you want to show us in the lab?
So what happens in this lab is that this lab is divided into two parts. And I'm going to use some terminology. And if you don't understand, you can say the same thing again. It's over your head. But let me show you. So everything starts in this little lab here. Okay. Which is called the pre-amplification lab, which means we do a lot of the first part of the assay in this lab. So we are required to have like a physical separation between the pre-amplification and post-amplification. So this is where the DNA samples are set up, and we do a lot of amplification, like a polymerase chain reaction-based studies in this lab.
I got it, doctor. No problem.
You got it, right? I have to walk you through the process.
Okay.
Then this is essentially the post-amplification lab. And this is where we have the scanner. So this is our scanner, which scans the 2.7 million probes on a chip.
And what is a chip? What's a chip?
So I'm going to show you a chip. So this is an example of a microarray chip.
So that would come to you from a lab? Or
from the company.
From the company.
So we buy the chip and the reagents from the company. In this case, it is Affymetrix. And this 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter area that you see has actually probes on it, which are 2.7 million regions of our genome, the human genome.
Now, where do you get that from?
We get that from the peripheral blood of patients. Okay. So we isolate the DNA, and then we have a number of steps via which we process the DNA, and then we put that onto this chip. And this is the scanner, which can hold 48 of these chips at the same time. And then there's a laser in it, which actually scans the 2.7 million regions, and then we get the output of it, and then we do the interpretation.
Now, so how old is this machine? I mean, it has to be brand new technology.
It is brand new. This machine is actually the FDA cleared version, and we got this last year. Everything that you see in this area, so this instrument, for example, washes the reagents in this chip. There are actually two holes over here through which there are needles that solution goes in and goes out, which you can see here. So it's pretty much automated. This is also the FDA cleared version, so we have all the FDA cleared version of this technology right now.
I want to know how somebody comes up with these ideas.
That is a very good question. So for those to understand this better, I think this was maybe in the early 1990s or late 1980s was when Ed Southern, he's a scientist, he's a British scientist who came up with this technology, which is called the Southern blot, which meant that you took one gene at a time and did the analysis of that gene. So let's say you have the cystic fibrosis gene. For cystic fibrosis, you could only study one gene at a time. In this case, this is the entire genome. So this is like 2.7 million Southern blots being done in just one single assay. I mean, that's the simplest way I can explain this.
Well, it's phenomenal.
Yes.
It's phenomenal.
It is. So this is emerging technology and high throughput microarray analysis, whole genome scan at this exceptionally high resolution.
Now,
in this 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter area.
Yes. Now, one question: how much does it cost to have a test like that? Do you have any idea?
So,
roughly, I mean,
it. Are you talking in terms of chips and reagents, or are you talking in terms of how we market it?
How is it marketed? How much, can you give me any idea how much it costs the person that is having this test?
So it costs around $2,000 for
this. That's not as much as I would have thought.
Exactly. So with the technology, the cost of these chips and reagents and being able to offer this kind of testing to patients has really gone down. I would say 10 years ago, it would have probably been $20,000, and now it's only $2,000, just because of all the automation and because of, the advances in technology and how easy it is now to do this kind of testing.
Now, just a little off the subject here, but what got you interested in being in this field?
So my PhD is in molecular biology. I did that from India, but I was always interested in cytogenetics and being able to, do this kind of service for patients, especially no matter, you know, whatever the disorder. So this is how I got pulled into genetics. One of my dad's closest friends is a cytogeneticist in India. And so that was probably how everything got started in with me. And so then I came to the U.S. and then I came to Greenwood Genetics Center because we have the American Board of Medical Genetics and Genomics accreditation program, which is one of the very few globally accredited programs. So I came here for my fellowship and I'm still here.
I think that's fabulous. What else can you show us about what goes on here? Anything else to show us?
Oh, yes, lots to show you.
Oh, okay.
So this is the FDA-cleared technology.
Right.
So this we use like a whole genome scan. But if you went through the molecular lab, there's another technology which is called next-generation sequencing. Now, next-generation sequencing identifies single base pair mutations. It's like, you know, when you have letters. So this is like identifying chapters in a book. And okay. I'm just stealing this from my cytogenetics senior director, Dr. Barb DuPont, who gives this example that imagine your whole genome like a book. Now, when you look at chapters, if you have two chapters or if you have deleted chapters, that's what microarray technology does. Now, if you start reading the sentences and you look at letters and words, if they're missing, that's like your base pair level of the genome. And that is being tested using a new technology, emerging technology called next generation sequencing. So as a complement to our next generation sequencing, because that identifies, you know, single base pair changes, to look for paragraph duplications or deletions. So if you have a paragraph in your chapter, do you have multiple copies of that paragraph or is a paragraph deleted? For that, we have a targeted microarray platform. And for that, we use the Agilent technology.
Okay.
And we have a targeted microarray. And this is the Agilent scanner here. And I don't think we have a slide. It is like a glass slide.
Where just like we you have, used in the lab when you were
like,
in high school?
Exactly.
Yes.
And where we can run four patients at the same time. But this platform only has 180,000 probes on it.
Remember, just 180,000.
Just 180,000. But remember, as compared to 2.7 million, on the other 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter area that I was showing you by Affymetrics, this is considerably low resolution, but it is targeted for as a complement for our next generation sequencing panels.
Now, just out of curiosity, what about what type of patients take advantage of this testing?
So there are a number of genes in the human genome that are associated with a specific disorder. So for example, we have a 92 gene X-linked intellectual disability panel. What that means is that the 92 genes on the X chromosome that have been associated with intellectual disability are all combined in a panel. 10 years ago, what people used to do was just test one gene at a time, start with this one and then go down the list, which was extremely expensive and extremely time consuming. And now you have the ability with these new technologies to put them in a panel, test in one assay all these genes at the same time, and then have the readout. So again, the cost goes down for the patients, you get higher resolution, you get more information for those patients. So at the Greenwood Genetics Center, we have a number of next generation sequencing panels, and this technology is used as a complement for those.
Now, would you deal with babies, prenatal, or just anybody that is experiencing some type of difficulties?
So for example, the FDA clearance for the Affymetrics platform is only for babies or postnatal.
Okay.
Not for prenatal and not for cancer. Now, one of the panels that we have is a skeletal dysplasia panel. So if a woman has an ultrasound and you see a baby that has short limbs, so we have a specific panel, or you see some other abnormalities, you know, related to your skeletal system, then we have a panel where we have a number of genes that could be easily tested for any disorder. So those kind of sample specimens we would test by this platform.
Okay, so the one that's been approved is for babies. Is it not for adults?
So babies and adults, but not for prenatal specimens, not for amnio or CVS, not for those.
Okay, all right. And what else do we have to look at here?
So one other technology that we have established here is called quantitative PCR. So polymerase chain reaction is a technology that is used essentially to make multiple copies of a target of your genome. So polymerase chain reaction comes from polymerization from chemistry, when you start adding things to it, mm-hmm. and then chain reaction that you have multiple cycles where you can generate multiple copies, essentially from physics, you know, like the fission and the reaction. So this technique was developed by Carrie Mullis. I think it was in late 1980s. And now we have this technology, which is called a real-time PCR or quantitative PCR, where you can determine the amount of the number of copies of your target in each cycle. So to give you an example, when you start off with, you just want to test region A of your genome. Mm-hmm. So you design this methodology in such a way, and there's an enzyme which is called a polymerase enzyme that makes multiple copies of your DNA, essentially like DNA replication. So now after each cycle, there is an exponential growth. So after 30 cycles, you would have a million-fold amplification of your target, which is called enrichment. So when we find...
What do you do with this now that you've got all this? What do you do with all this?
So what we do with this technology is that whenever we run a microarray platform, right now, just because of the number of probes on each platform, we're looking for very small number of probes that are showing us a deleted chapter or a duplicated chapter, right? So this technology goes even smaller and tells us whether it is present or not. Now, let's say we find a chapter that is deleted in a patient. Now, the parents want to know whether it is coming from the mom or dad, or whether it is de novo, means it is new. It is just a new, you know, aberration that happened. So we use this methodology to test our family studies, you know, to do the parents, to essentially find out whether this is coming from the mom or the dad, or whether it is de novo. So we use this technology. It is cheap, it is cost effective, it is time efficient, so, you know.
The machine does all the work.
Well, the machine processes it. Okay. We do all the work. We are the ones who analyze, interpret, and report it.
Yeah.
So all the directors.
Yeah. Well, you know, since you've been working here at the Genetic Center, it seems like things at the genetics level is changing so rapidly.
Absolutely. And these two technologies, microarray in the past decade and then next generation sequencing in the past 5-6 years, have absolutely dramatically revolutionized whole genome testing and the ability to find out, you know, the reasons for somebody's clinical problem or clinical features. So at the Greenwood Genetics Center, the focus is on neurodevelopmental disabilities and birth defects. And we have hundreds of families and patients that we have followed over the number of years, mm-hmm. in the past 30, 40 years. And with the advances in technologies, there are a number of families that have found an answer with the help of these technologies. So 30 years ago, any new technology that came out, tried to identify the problem in a specific family, couldn't find the genetic cause, and now we know. So these technologies have played a huge role in giving families their answers and ending their diagnostic odyssey.
Now, what is the future with all this equipment and the testing that'll be out there? How will it change what people do?
So I think everything is dependent on the resolution. So like I was explaining to you, you've got your chapters. Now you go down to paragraphs, then you go down to sentences, then you go down to letters. So the next generation sequencing is always at the letter level. However, it's still at the sentence level, you know, with respect to the targeted panels that I was telling you. I think in the next 5-6 years, it will be whole genome sequencing. That means read each letter, each line, each chapter, everything from your entire genome. However, just having that answer may end the diagnostic odyssey, but there will be so many unknown answers about what is the function, what is the value in an individual for this specific disorder. For example, Down syndrome has been known since 1970s. We know there are 3 copies of trisomy 21. Is there a cure? So I think all this information will really pave the way for therapeutics, for the treatment of genetic disorders. That's our hope. That's, I guess, everybody's hope, to be able to go one step further towards providing therapy or treatment.
You know, people always wonder what will happen futuristically if since we're going to know all these genetics and everything, will we start super genetically making human beings?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. On a research basis, you know, people have tried cloning, and it just is not the natural way. It's just not how it's meant to be.
So you don't see that happening?
No, I don't see that happening.
All right, we'll come back in 10 years and see what's happening.
Things could change.
Absolutely.
I think that the focus right now that, you know, whenever we go to meetings, we talk to these scientists, we talk to these big pharmaceutical companies, one of the main goals is that, okay, we've got all this information now. We've got whole genome sequenced, you know. When in the early 2000s, when the whole genome sequencing was being, the Human Genome Project was, you know, set, it cost like more than $1 million. Now to do that, it's less than $10,000. So this technology is enabling people, is enabling our clinicians and our scientists to be able to test more people, to give them the answers so that they can be prepared in future for their genetic counseling, for their reproductive options, you know. And the next step would be, well, now you've got this information, how do you help them? Can you do something? If a kid has some sort of disability, right now we know the kid has disability, what's next? Just besides managing that, okay, go to an ophthalmologist or go to a neurologist or go to a hematopathologist, what's next? If there are specific features, can you address them? Can you provide them a better life, you know, better care, proper management? I think that's the questions that need to be answered.
Well, this has been very fascinating. We're so glad you took the time to show us. Is there anything else you would like to tell us?
No, I think this is it. Stop here.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you so much. And your name again is?
Alka Chaube.
All right. Thank you so much here
Thank
today.
You.
All right. Okay. Well, I am here with Dr. Charles Schwartz. I understand you are over the research department here.
Yes, I'm director of research. I would say division rather than department.
Okay. So what exactly do you do here?
So we conduct research into identifying the causation of birth defects, intellectual disability, and autism.
And how long has this part been part of the Genetic Center?
So the building has been here since 1996. Okay. But I came in 1985 with the primary purpose of setting up a research component.
What made you want to get into genetics research, or had you been doing that before you came here?
I was doing cancer genetics before I came here.
Okay, and how do you feel that y'all do here with what you're doing? How is the research progressing? What are the things that you're most proud of in this research department here?
All right, so we are responsible for about identifying a third of the genes on the X chromosome responsible for intellectual disability. And that's since 1990. So over that time, we've been heavily supported by NIH for 20 of the 25 years. And so I would say for a group this size in Greenwood, we're doing quite well.
Now, how many people work in the department?
Oh, geez. That answer you're going to have to ask Lori. I don't keep track of the people.
Oh, okay.
I would say somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 to 20.
Okay. I mean, just an idea for the
department. I'm not a bean counter.
You're not a bean counter. Okay. What do you like? Do you have any specialties that you work with? Like Down syndrome, or do you work with any?
No, it's the whole collection of intellectual disabilities. So there is no specialty per se.
Okay. Since 1985, I guess there's been probably a lot of changes that have come about in genetics. We've just been talking to some of the other departments, some of the other things that we found. What has the research department here at the Genetics Center, just some of the highlights maybe of the things that have been contributed? As far as the research, what have you found? What have you discovered? What things are you personally proud of that has come out of the Genetics Center?
Right, so first it would have to be the genes on the X chromosome, because that's okay. That put us on the map. I would have to say limb malformations. We are responsible for actually identifying the fact that there are chromosomal rearrangements that are responsible for a good portion of individuals with limb malformations, mm-hmm. particularly split hand, split foot. And then third is autism, the finding we have in autism, looking at the metabolic profiles of patients with autism.
Well, there's so much to autism, and autism is so much in the news right now. I mean, as far as the numbers that they're finding of children with autism, what do you think the future of that is?
So I think the future, with some developments here using what we call the BioLog platform, so we can look at actually what's happening at the cellular level, mm-hmm. so we know what's wrong with the cells, and some other findings at other locations in the country and the world, I think it may become a little bit more evident what the metabolic problem is associated with autism, and if there is a metabolic problem, then it becomes treatable.
Rather than trying,
at the moment people are looking at genes.
Okay.
And every time they identify a gene, it's isolated. That is, they look at 100 people and they find a gene mutation in one. So that helps that one person, but it doesn't help the other 99. And there are a lot of labs doing all this. So incrementally, they're finding something, but each family is a different gene, which will be of little service to the general autism population. But if the behavioral aspect mm-hmm. is related to a metabolic problem.
Metabolic meaning what?
Oh, how the cells use energy, how they utilize what's in the diet. I mean, metabolic.
Okay.
So,
then
you can treat the metabolic profile without having to know anything about the genetic profile of the individual. So the one thing that we're proud of is that our finding in terms of the utilization of tryptophan, which is not utilized properly by autism, patients with autism, that is associated with the behavior, not associated with the cognitive function. So
if you can address the
behavioral aspect for a lot of individuals, that's really the major factor.
Sure.
Relative to the individual and relative to the family. The cognition may be independent of that because you have what are called high-functioning autistic patients like Asperger's syndrome and low-functioning autism patients, but behavioral-wise, they look similar. So if you can address the behavioral aspect, that's solving half the problem.
That is pretty awesome. So do you think that this is something that will be, how close are we to being able to solve the autism?
Not as close as the people with autism
would like.
So it could be 2 years, it could be 5 years. What you learn from genetics these days, you don't make promises because for example, Huntington's gene was found 20, 25 years ago. There's no cure for Huntington's yet. Breast cancer gene has been long known for 10 years and there's no cure for cancer. So I will not project an endpoint.
Yeah.
I'll give you a range. Maybe 5 years.
Could be less, could be 10,
yeah. Could be more.
That is pretty fascinating. That has to be, from your perspective, you find this work satisfying?
Oh, yeah. Because probably every week we get calls, particularly for the X-linked intellectual disability. We either get calls or emails from the United States or Europe asking for us to assist with those families making a diagnosis and everything. So, yes, it's rewarding because probably on a monthly basis we affect at least one family in a positive way. So that's 12 families a year at a minimum. What's more rewarding than that?
Absolutely. Do you, now, since you have been here since 1985, mm-hmm. been a lot of changes in the genetics and everything. And the way the Genetic Center was formed and everything with Dr. Stevenson mm-hmm. and this, what do you think why do you think the Genetic Center has been able to move forward as much as it has and be so cutting edge in all of this?
The support of the Self Foundation mm-hmm. and the support of the state government through the Department of Disabilities and Special Needs. It's a investment from both the private and the public sector mm-hmm. through the government and through NIH. So the funding and the support of the Department of Disabilities and Special Needs especially has allowed us to provide genetic services to the entire state of South Carolina. It's a unique environment. States with more money don't function as properly as South Carolina does relative to genetic services. And the Genetic Center is a freestanding private nonprofit. So it hasn't encumbered itself with a lot of bureaucratic stuff.
Well, that's true. That's very true. Now, the collaboration between Clemson and the Genetic Center, will that affect some of what you're doing here in the research? Will they become part of it?
So they should become part of it and hopefully complement what we're doing. There are some things that we could be doing better mm-hmm. or areas we could be exploring, but we don't have the personnel. So adding more top flight researchers in the next couple years for when the building is built, they're going to be adding 4 or 5 researchers. That doubles the number of researchers we have on hand. So yes, it should be productive for both us and Clemson.
It's an exciting time to be here with the Genetic Center, isn't it?
Yeah, it's too bad. I'm probably going to retire in about 5 years, but
well, that's 5 years. I mean, you know, you just told us you might, who knows, autism might be taken care of.
Yeah, it may keep me around.
May keep you around. Yeah. Well, Dr. Charles Schwartz, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
All right. Well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, we have been out here at the Genetic Center today. We've had a fabulous tour. We've seen a lot of different things. Lori Bassett is the head of communications out here. Lori, you did an excellent job giving us all these different professionals to talk to today. How would you wrap this all up if we were going to talk about what we've seen here today?
I think what you've seen here today is that the Greenwood Genetic Center is involved in so many different aspects of medical genetics, from the clinic to the diagnostic lab to researching new genes and new therapies, and then educational programs. So we go out and talk to students about this field. So we have a lot of things going on here. We stay very, very busy, but we all have a common focus and a common theme on improving the lives of our patients and improving the lives of folks in South Carolina and beyond.
Well, with the new testing that's out there and the changes that are coming, the involvement with Clemson, with the Genetic Center, Self-Regional's involvement, and it's just going to change what's happening out. It won't change what's happening, but it'll certainly expand what's happening.
It absolutely will, and we're very, very excited about all the prospects that are going to come our way with the addition of Clemson and Self-Regional as official partners with the Greenwood Genetic Center. It's going to allow us to expand what we're able to do. It's going to complement some of what we're doing. It's going to provide us with resources that we previously did not have access to. And we hope that eventually we're going to be able to fill the Greenwood Research Park with more companies, more life science, more biotech companies that all work together towards that same mission and make Greenwood the hub of biotechnology in South Carolina.
Absolutely. Now, of course, one of the other things is you've got a 40th anniversary coming up.
We do. We're very excited about that. This is our 40th anniversary. Dr. Stevenson and Dr. Taylor founded the Greenwood Genetic Center in 1974 with a lot of support from the Self Foundation and from the Department of Disabilities and Special Needs. In September, we're going to be hosting a celebration dinner. We're also going to have a special, what we call South Carolina Genetics Conclave, where we're inviting genetics professionals from all over the region to come. It's going to be a day-long symposium where we talk about what's new in the field of treatment for genetic disorders. So we're very, very excited to be celebrating this great anniversary.
Well, you know, to be here 40 years is really a testament to, well, I guess we have to say to Jim Self and his vision to see what Dr. Stevenson and Dr. Taylor had in mind.
Absolutely. We had the visionaries in Dr. Stevenson and Dr. Taylor, but they needed some financial assistance, some logistical assistance to actually get their big dreams off the ground. And so we are certainly indebted to Jim Self and his legacy for seeing that vision and for realizing the importance of that for South Carolina and for putting us here in Greenwood.
You know, it's got to be every day your job has to be very exciting because there's so much happening. I mean, what happened last week with the testing that's been approved, that certainly has changed a whole lot, hasn't it?
It has, and it's fun to keep up with everything that's going on in genetics, and it's fun to be on the cutting edge of that here in Greenwood and to see kind of what's coming in the future. So we're very excited about all that's going on here.
And I know that futuristically, the next 10 years are going to be another very exciting time right here in Greenwood.
I'm sure that they will. 10 years ago, if you'd asked us where we were, it would be hard-pressed to say here.
Right.
So it's hard to know what the next 10 years will bring, but I know it'll be exciting and dramatic advances in the field.
Absolutely. Well, Lori Bassett, thanks so much for setting up a great tour and making sure that we got to see a whole lot of great things out here today.
Thank you, Ann, and come back anytime.
All right, we will. Thank you very much.